did not fairly review his case. He can also go through the pardon board, which is a 5-member panel, and also the governor. 6 have to be unanimous, or compassionate release, which is extremely limited.
Finally, if you can comment, Larry Hamm, on what you're doing today in front of the prison in Frackville, Pennsylvania, what this more than 100-mile march has meant for you. You're about the same age as Mumia Abu-Jamal.
I am exactly the same age as Mumia, and our birthdays are in the same month. Yesterday, we reached the 100-mile mark, and today we will march the last 3 miles to Mahanoy Prison, where Mumia is incarcerated. We will have a press conference and a rally there to once again make the call for Mumia to get the medical care that he needs, and for all prisoners, especially our elders, to get the medical care
that
they
need. And Noel Hanrahan, 10 seconds.
It's relief from the inside out. This was built by prisoners. It was built by prisoners' families, the Abolitionist Law Center, Salim Holbrook, Brett Grody, the lead attorney. We are going to win and create the world that we deserve.
Noel Hanrahan is one of Mumia Abu-Jamal's attorneys and founder and producer of Prison Radio. Larry Hamm is chair of the People's Organization for Progress on the March for Mumia, speaking to us from Frackville, Pennsylvania, where he is imprisoned. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
This is Roxanne Dunbar Ortiz, and this is KBOO Portland.
We know a KBOO membership is at the top of everyone's wish list this season. Give the gift of supporting grassroots community media by making a donation during our KBOO Fights Back campaign now through December 31st. Our $75,000 goal will go towards everyone's favorite music, news, and public affairs programming all year long. Just go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operation and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communication Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Policy and Governance Committee meets on the third Tuesday of March, June, September, and December at 6 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if the meeting is being held.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on this end-of-year membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News, Portland area high schoolers walk out to protest ICE arrests.
The EPA seeks to weaken regulations on PFAS.
And in cosmic news, tonight is likely the final night of the Geminid meteor shower.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Tuesday, December 9, 2025. KBOO is currently in our end-of-the-year membership drive, and we'd like to urge you to become a member by going online to kboo.fm/give. I'm Eric Leuschner.
And I'm Dave Johnson. High school students around the Portland area protested the increasing activity of ICE arrests in and around their schools on Monday, urging their school systems to do more to protect their students. KABU reporter Lizard has the details.
On Monday, Southridge High School, Forest Grove High School, and Beaverton High School hosted protests of ICE arrests in and around their schools. Since October, ICE activity in the area has been steadily increasing, even resulting in encounters with students. In November, a student was detained from McMinnville High School off campus for lunch, and a group of teenagers were held at gunpoint by ICE officials in an unmarked van at Dutch Bros. Immigration rights activists have been pressing Beaverton School District to raise awareness about the heightened ICE activity around the area and stay in line with Oregon being a sanctuary state. Beaverton's policy is that ICE agents may not enter the school buildings without a judicial warrant. This ignores the activity in the surrounding area. Southridge students, during their protest, listed off arrests that happened in their area, at the apartment complex across the street, at the 7-Eleven on the corner, the daycare not far from the school's football field. Schools have begun taking steps to protect students as ICE arrests increase. Southridge school officials handed out bright orange whistles to blow if students spotted ICE agents while off campus. They're also allowing students to attend online school if they do not feel safe coming into school in person, and training office staff as notaries to allow them to officiate documents. A Southridge student who did not give her name to protect her family said, quote, "I feel like, as students, we're scared that we'll go home one day and there will be no one there. Maybe we were safe at school, but what if we had no one at home?" Jack Flageris, another student at Southridge, said, "Our school is a sanctuary. It is a safe place to be, but getting to and from school is hard for a lot of people. The principal does a great job of protecting students inside the school, but she doesn't have any power outside of the school." At the school board meeting last month, district leaders said there are multiple trainings available for staff, both online and in person, and tailored for specific jobs. They also said the school district has a clear protocol in place for when reports of ICE come in. As ICE activity increases across the metro area, the people have taken a stand for themselves and their community. For KABU News, I'm Lizard.
A Portland police officer was arrested on domestic violence charges in Clackamas County on Monday. Jimmy Price has been with the Portland Police Bureau for 27 years. Two of the charges he faces are felony charges. State records show Price has been on a leave of absence from the PPB since early October, and he's been placed on leave by the Bureau twice before, once in 2020 and in 2021. Portland Police Chief Bob Day said, quote, "We take this extremely seriously. While the officer, like any individual, is entitled to the presumption of innocence until proven guilty, the charges do not reflect the values or expectations of the Portland Police Bureau," end quote.
Proposed exemptions to the Biden administration's PFAS reporting rule under the Toxic Substances Control Act would weaken regulations on the monitoring and reporting of the toxic chemicals. Experts say the changes pose a threat to human health. Frieda Ross reports.
The EPA is proposing new changes that experts say would weaken reporting and monitoring rules for toxic forever chemicals known as PFAS. These thousands of synthetic chemicals are used in everything from nonstick cookware and waterproof clothing to firefighting foam, and have been linked to cancers, thyroid disease, immune dysfunction, and developmental harm in children. Previously, the Biden administration required all manufacturers using PFAS chemicals to report usage data by this year. Betsy Sutherland with the Environmental Protection Network says the new changes would extend the timeline and offer exemptions to some companies.
And what this new rule does is say, nope, we're going to give you at least another year. And furthermore, we're going to exempt many of the people who would have had to report their PFAS use.
The Trump administration has also filed a motion to vacate portions of its 2024 rule setting drinking water limits for the chemicals, seeking to eliminate enforceable standards for four different types of PFAS. Sutherland says the agency is playing catch-up on determining what PFAS chemicals are in our environment and how dangerous they are to humans, noting right now scientists are only able to detect just a fraction of specific PFAS chemicals in the environment.
It's taken EPA a number of years to just be able to monitor 40 PFAS chemicals in our water and sediments. And so we need to know what other PFAS chemicals beyond these 40 we can measure for.
The EPA recently set limits on 6 PFAS chemicals based on mounting scientific evidence of harm to human health. According to the Environmental Working Group, nearly 70 million acres of farmland across the U.S. could be contaminated with PFAS. I'm Frieda Ross, Texas News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
The U.S. Supreme Court looks likely to expand presidential power over independent agencies. The Justice Department sues states to get voter registration data. And legal aid groups struggle to keep staff amid increased ICE enforcement. With that story and more, it's Farah Siddiqui with 2025 Talks.
The EPA is proposing new changes that experts say would weaken reporting and monitoring.
Welcome to 2025 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
You're asking us to destroy the structure of government and to take away from Congress its ability to protect, its idea that the government is better structured with some agencies that are independent.
Supreme Court Justice Sonia Sotomayor questions the Trump administration's effort to fire a member of the Federal Trade Commission without cause. That could upend 90 years of limits on presidential power over independent agencies, which regulate large parts of the economy and areas like campaign finance. Government lawyers argue it will bring more accountability, and court conservatives look likely to agree. President Donald Trump says he'll give $11 billion in aid to farmers struggling in his trade wars. Farmers were already facing rising input costs and low commodity prices, with some warning of the worst crisis in rural America since the 80s. The Justice Department has now sued more than a dozen states for refusing to share their voter registration files, which include driver's license and partial Social Security numbers. Rhode Island Secretary of State Greg Amore says the administration is undermining Americans' confidence in elections.
We don't know where this information is going. We don't know if it'll be shared. And so we take that responsibility seriously, and we believe it's in violation of federal law.
Justice says it's making sure states are keeping clean voter lists to avoid non-citizens voting, which all but never happens. Legal aid groups say they're fighting low pay and burnout among their immigration lawyers. ICE is now targeting Minnesota's Somali migrants, who Trump says are, quote, garbage. Julie Decker with the Immigrant Law Center there says they're flooded with calls just as cases are becoming more time-consuming.
There will always be more need than there is the ability to provide services. And the ramped up changes in immigration policy across the board has amplified that.
The developer of an app that alerts users to nearby ICE activity is suing Justice after Attorney General Pam Bondi got Apple to remove it. The government argues the ICE Block app puts officers' safety at risk, but its creators call it free speech. Librarians are breathing a sigh of relief as a lawsuit is forcing the Trump administration to restore $160 million in previously allocated funds. An executive order signed in March gutted the Institute of Museum and Library Services, but a federal judge has declared that unlawful. Anthony Chow is president of the California Library Association.
A lot of people have been laid off. A lot of projects have been dismantled. And so while we're excited that the funds are returned, there is a little bit of skepticism in terms of whether it might be taken away again.
He says libraries are still struggling with the loss of blocked funds designed for digital skills training and workforce development. I'm Catherine Carley for Pacifica Network and Public News Service.
You are listening to an end-of-year membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News. Our goal is to raise $75,000 by December 31st. We'd like to remind you that you can renew your KBOO membership or become a new member at any time during this program by going to kboo.fm/give. Stay tuned after the newscast for an in-depth report on how the Trump administration is reclassifying lawful immigrants as unauthorized. At 6, it's This Way Out. Then at 7, Civic Cipher. Tonight's weather will be rainy with an overnight low of about 46 degrees. A flood watch is in effect until midday Wednesday. Tomorrow, look for clouds with a high of 59. Today in history, In 1868, the first traffic lights are installed outside of Westminster Palace in London. The first ones looked like a railway sign, with flag arms illuminated at night by red and green gas lamps. The quote of the day is from British Czech philosopher Ernst Gellner, who wrote, quote, "It is nationalism which engenders nations, and not the other way around."
Native actress Elaine Miles, known for Northern Exposure, was harassed by ICE in Washington last month, who questioned the validity of her tribal ID. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Native actress Elaine Miles, known for her roles in TV's Northern Exposure and the 1998 movie Smoke Signals, has spent the last month contending with a run-in with ICE agents and the response to her sharing her story with local and national media. Brian Bull of Buffalo's Fire reports.
On November 3rd, Miles says she was at a bus stop in Redmond, Washington, preparing to do a target run when several men in camo fatigues and tactical gear appeared. For 45 minutes, she says they deliberated over the legitimacy of her tribal ID and if they were aware of her rights as a U.S. citizen.
I go, "Are you federal? Are you recognized as a federal officer? Do you have the warrant stating that you have right to stop me?" And then they kept saying, "We don't need a warrant." And I go, "Yes, you do."
Miles said the man often looked confused at her assertions and finally left when another man called them back to a waiting SUV. In the following weeks, as ICE activity continued around Redmond, Miles retreated from doing things around town, prompting concern from relatives and friends. She decided late last month to share her story, including with the Seattle Times, Newsweek, and Salon. She found support, but also toxic trolling.
People are calling me a racist, a bigot, hateful, you know. And then I even had some people say I was a pretendian. Oh, and I like this one. "Miss Piggy, go back to the reservation where you belong."
Miles says she'll keep sharing her story and advises her fellow natives to carry their tribal IDs, passports, and copies of their birth certificates. Meanwhile, Miles is looking forward to her next TV project, a law enforcement pilot that will start filming next year.
Probably be like January, February. She's a knowledgeable cop.
Tribes across the U.S. have reported their citizens being confronted by ICE as President Trump's immigration crackdown continues. On Veterans Day, a Native woman in Des Moines, Iowa, had an ICE detainer placed on her, which almost led to her being put into ICE custody, until it was learned jail administrators confused her with another person with the same last name. For National Native News, I'm Brian Bull.
The U.S. Department of Homeland Security did not respond to requests for comments. Without reliable internet, it's often challenging for veterans to apply for and access benefits, including mental health care. As KJZZ's Gabriel Pietrazio reports, a Phoenix-based telehealth company and a state agency are partnering to help better equip veterans living on reservations.
So far, Janice Tallis Denny, who is Hopi and with the company Televeda, has delivered 16 military-grade kits containing Starlink satellite internet systems at no cost to nearly a dozen Arizona tribes beginning this year in Parker.
If I can do it, anybody can do this.
Her latest stop, New Pasqua, is just on the outskirts of Tucson.
It's a hot day today. We don't want to be out here too long.
Along with her is Dylan Delzato on behalf of the Arizona Department of Veterans Services.
Let's start with 50 of them, see where it goes, and here we are rather quickly. Excited to get the rest of them out there, and a big roadblock for a lot of vets is the internet connectivity.
Especially on tribal lands. Carmen Rivera is the Pasquayaki Tribe's Veterans Benefits Counselor and often travels to the Mexico border, meeting with tribal members living off-grid.
And when you give them, you know, information, whether it be off of this system or you give it to them in paper, they like that.
For National Native News, I'm Gabriel Pietrazio.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
The holiday season can be overwhelming for those struggling with substance abuse. More methods of treatment are being sought to make a difference. Terry D. has the details.
The holiday season is seen as a time for socializing with family and friends, but the stress, loneliness, and financial worries that accompany the holidays can trigger a relapse for those with substance addictions. According to a 2024 report from the Indiana Family Social Services Agency and Syra Health, approximately 10% of Hoosiers report alcohol addiction. Cooper Zelnick is the CEO of Groups Recovery Together, a national provider of outpatient addiction treatment. He says the holidays can be either a time of increased risk or a turning point toward recovery.
This is a disease of isolation. The disease makes you think and feel that you're the only person who's ever had this experience. You're not. So reaching out, being honest about what you're going through and asking for help is the best suggestion for folks who are struggling.
The report also indicates that nearly 21% of Hoosiers engage in binge drinking, with the highest rates among young residents. Just over 6% of Indiana residents report serious mental health issues within the last year. Zelnick notes that while telehealth expanded during the pandemic, this option is not readily available to Indiana's rural residents, as these areas lack access to many forms of basic health care. He adds technology alone is not a complete answer to the issue.
We, as a society, need to invest in resources that folks can access irrespective of where they are, but we also need to build access where the problem is and go to the communities that need us most.
Zelnick adds the holidays can be hard for people supporting loved ones who struggle with substance use as well, and advises them to prioritize their own needs first. I'm Terry D. reporting.
Today is one of the final and most intense evenings of the Geminid meteor shower. The meteor shower is active from October 20th to December 10th. The Geminid meteors originate from an asteroid named 3200 Phaethon. This asteroid is unique as it does not follow a typical orbit within the asteroid belt. Often called a rock comet, its orbit is an elliptical oval, reaching a maximum distance of 359 million kilometers away from the Sun and closing in to a minimum of 21 million kilometers. This distance is close enough to cause the radiant heat from the Sun to break apart Phaethon and create the Geminid meteors. At the same time, typically November to December, the Earth's orbit intersects the orbit of Phaethon, leaving the Geminids to fall into our atmosphere. Geminids are bright and intensely colored, caused by friction burning the meteors entering our dense atmosphere. After 9 p.m., the Geminids will rise and will persist until 2 a.m., peaking at midnight. Best viewing locations are central or eastern Oregon, especially dark open areas around Mount Bachelor snow parks. Lake County is home to Oregon Outback International Dark Skies, offering their skies for viewing.
With a rapidly aging population and high rates of chronic disease, health experts are urging folks over 50 to embrace fitness and nutrition as foundational tools for healthy aging. They cite benefits for body and brain. They recommend simple, sustainable steps to get started. KBOO's Carmel Pierre-Louis has more.
As our population ages, the focus turns to preventive health strategies that can add quality to later years. Experts stress that regular physical activity and proper nutrition are critical for managing chronic conditions and protecting brain health. According to the CDC, physical activity can help prevent or manage many health issues common in older adults, like heart disease and diabetes, while also boosting cognitive function. John A. Lewis of Dr. Lewis Nutrition, a plant-based nutrition and supplement company, says the power to change one's health trajectory remains firmly in an individual's hands, regardless of age.
If you've been diagnosed with some type of cancer or heart disease, you still, as long as you are alive and in control of yourself, you still have the ability to change that by using proper nutrition and exercising every day and using key dietary supplements.
Lewis points out that despite a national trend towards sedentary lifestyles, even small amounts of daily movement can start a positive chain reaction for health. For those unsure where to begin, Lewis's advice is refreshingly straightforward. Start small and be consistent.
The easiest thing that somebody can do is have a good pair of sneakers and just simply start walking around in their neighborhood, even if it's only 5 minutes the first time.
Beyond exercise, hydration, and key nutrients like vitamin D are also pillars of a healthy aging strategy. Experts agree that a comprehensive approach combining movement, whole foods, quality sleep, and stress management is a true path to vitality after 50. For KBOO News and the Public News Service, I'm Carmel Pierre-Louis.
The Russians and the Trump administration have come together on a peace plan based squarely on promoting U.S. investments in Russia's energy and mining sectors. But one observer contends the real job of Trump's envoys is to get Ukraine to make concessions so that these investments can move forward. In a word, it's all about profit, not security. Now we go to Global Citizen commentary on the issue from Portland State Professor Emeritus Mel Gertov. The opinions expressed in the following piece.
The meeting in Moscow on the Ukraine war between Special Envoy Steve Witkoff and Jared Kushner with Vladimir Putin went about as expected. Constructive talks, coupled with no change whatsoever in Russia's position. We'll see what happens, Trump said, when nothing is going to happen, so long as he is willing to let Putin string him along. What is happening is going on behind the scenes, with Russia flaunting business deals and the Americans chomping at the bit to get into the Russian economy. The Wall Street Journal has offered the best insight to these arrangements in a lengthy article called Make Money, Not War, Trump's Real Plan for Peace in Ukraine. Note the language, a plan for peace, not a peace plan. That distinction is meant to convey that Ukraine's future will be decided by business interests, not Ukraine's or Europe's security concerns. Peace will supposedly come from U.S. investments in Russia, which will so enthrall Putin that he will scratch his ambitions to take over Ukraine or weaken the NATO alliance. Here's some of what the Wall Street Journal found. First, as to Russian strategy, the aim for some time has been, quote, to bypass the traditional U.S. national security apparatus and convince the administration to view Russia not as a military threat, but as a land of bountiful opportunity. By dangling multi-billion dollar rare earth and energy deals, Moscow could reshape the economic map of Europe. That view jibes with what Steve Witkoff told the Wall Street Journal. Russia has so many vast resources, vast expanses of land, he said. If everybody's prospering and there's upside for everybody, that's going to naturally be a bulwark against future conflicts there, because everybody's thriving. For people like Witkoff and Trump, the key to Russian-American relations is that billionaires in both countries make deals. On Russia's side, says the Wall Street Journal, some of Putin's most trusted friends sanctioned billionaires from his St. Petersburg hometown, Timchenko, Kovalchuk, and the Rotenberg brothers. Their representatives met American companies to explore rare earth mining and energy deals. In secret talks, ExxonMobil Senior Vice President Neil Chapman met with Igor Sechin, the boss of Russia's second largest company, Rosneft, to discuss Exxon's return to the massive Sakhalin project and investments stranded after Russia's 2022 invasion of Ukraine. Exxon, billionaire investor Todd Boehly, and others have explored buying assets owned by Lukoil, Russia's second largest oil producer. The U.S. sanctioned Lukoil in October to increase pressure on Moscow, prompting the company to put its overseas assets up for sale. Elliott Investment Management eyes buying a stake in a pipeline that carries Russian natural gas into Europe. American businessmen close to the Trump administration have been looking to position themselves as new economic links between the U.S. and Russia, says the journal. For example, Gentry Beach, a college friend of Donald Trump Jr. and campaign donor to his father, has been in talks to acquire a stake in a Russian Arctic gas project if it is released from sanctions. Another Trump donor, Stephen P. Lynch, paid $600,000 this year to a lobbyist close to Trump Jr. who is helping him seek a Treasury Department license to buy the Nord Stream 2 pipeline from a Russian state-owned company. More recently, those Kremlin-linked businessmen I mentioned have been offering U.S. counterparts gas concessions in the Sea of Okhotsk. Russia has also mentioned rare earth mining opportunities near the massive nickel mines of Norilsk and in as many as six other Siberian locations that are still unexploited. The Europeans, despite their supposed misgivings, have gone along with Trump, lowering the amount of frozen Russian assets that would be loaned to Ukraine from $240 billion to $186 billion, and now to only $105 billion. The reduced amount might enable Trump to offer Russia incentives to promote U.S. and other countries' investments, but it gives Ukraine that much less. Notably, state Treasury, CIA, and other U.S. agencies have largely been frozen out of these commercial dealings. Trump's special envoy for Ukraine, former Lieutenant General Keith Kellogg, was sidelined from these talks. He has decided to leave the government. Where does all this maneuvering leave Ukraine? In a word, under great pressure from Trump to make territorial and other concessions to Moscow so that a settlement can be declared and the business deals can be consummated. If there is any doubt about that strategy, read the administration's just-released National Security Strategy paper. It never mentions Russia's invasion of Ukraine, but devotes considerable space to deploring Europe's supposed civilizational crisis. No wonder a Kremlin spokesman said the paper, quote, corresponds in many ways to our vision. Thomas J. Friedman of the New York Times writes that only Trump, among all our presidents, seeks to be, quote, an arbiter who tries to make a profit from each side in the process. This is one of the most shameful episodes in American foreign policy, and the entire Republican Party is complicit in its perpetuation. I'm Mel Gertob for The Global Citizen. Thanks for listening.
You're listening to an end-of-year membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-801-1378. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Mel Gertoff, Carmel Pierre-Louis, and Lizard. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Carmina Flores. Special thanks to Antonia Gonzalez, Frida Ross, and Farah Siddiqui. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Dave Johnson.
And I'm Eric Leuschner. All of our KBOO programs are made possible by support from our members. KBOO is currently in our end-of-the-year fundraising drive, and it's our goal to raise $75,000 by December 31st. If you'd like to become a member and support our programming,